The Right Reverend Gene Robinson is the retired Episcopal Bishop of New Hampshire. In his career, Gene has displayed remarkable resilience in the face of hate and even death threats from his adversaries who felt their version of religious faith trumped his vocation as the first openly gay man to be elevated to bishop in his church. He's also been a longtime advocate for understanding across religious and cultural divides. I've been eager to hear his thoughts and feelings in the aftermath of the recent presidential election, and I'm very grateful to welcome Gene back to State of Belief Radio. Gene, thank you so much for being with us again.
Well, it's great to be with you again. And it's actually a good thing that you waited this long to chat with me, because I've been kind of paralyzed, as I think a lot of us were, following the election, partly because I and people like me think it was a kind of catastrophic result, and also because we had such a different impression from the polling. Mm-hmm. So it's been a real shock, and the people I know and work with are still a little bit shell-shocked from this result, which still boggles my mind.
Yeah. You know, Gene, I mean, there have been elections in which I have been disappointed. I don't know that there's ever been one in which I simply felt fear as well as disappointment. What kinds of fears and feelings have people brought to you since November the 8th?
First, let me say this. I happened to have the opportunity to go to Berlin back in September. Mm-hmm. And I was struck when I was there of how many very intentional reminders the German people have erected to remind themselves of what they did back in the 30s and 40s. Hmm. And I must admit, after this campaign, I think I have a lot more sympathy for the German people in the lead-up to Hitler. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not saying that Donald Trump is Hitler or that we are necessarily headed in that direction, but there is enough similarity in what we've seen to make me at least think of the German experience. Mm-hmm. You know, I and a lot of people just sat around for a while thinking something would stop this man, mm-hmm. thinking that something would disqualify him or some person would rise to stop him. And then one day you wake up and he's the nominee, and then a couple of months later you wake up and he's the president-elect. Mm-hmm. And now I understand how good people probably thought that somebody would stop Hitler, but it wasn't them that needed to stop him. Somebody else would do it.
Yeah.
And so that's what I'm hearing the most from the people that I work with, and especially those who are experiencing such fear, Muslims and the poor and people of color and LGBT people and women everywhere. Those people are just living terrified. And if you happen to be an undocumented person in this country, you know, I actually know some of those people who have gone into hiding and are expecting there to be a roundup and a mass deportation. I don't think we know how this is going to play out yet, because he's so reneged on so many of his promises already. Mm-hmm. But it's a frightening time. And I can't remember, you know, I'll be 70 next May, and I cannot remember a time like this, sort of like you were saying. Times when I was disappointed, yes, mm-hmm. but not fearful for myself, for people like me, and for the country.
Yeah. I think, Gene, one reason that I was so interested in us getting together to talk as soon as possible was so much of your ministry happened in an adversarial environment. What lessons did you learn during that time that could be helpful to many of us today?
You know, I think that perhaps the greatest learning that I had during that time when so much hatred and anger and frustration and even evil was coming my way. The thing I think I learned the most was that behind all of that is fear. And what I learned to do when I was attacked, especially if I was in that person's presence, was to, almost in a nanosecond, ask myself the question, okay, so he's just said this. What is he afraid of that causes him to say that? Mm-hmm. As opposed to dealing with the thing that actually gets voiced, is to ask the question, what is the fear behind that? And then seek to address that fear in a way that convinces that person that they need not be fearful. Mm-hmm. So here's how I apply that to what has just happened in this country. I think that many of Donald Trump's voters are not particularly racist or misogynist or anti-Muslim or anything like that. I think they're fearful, and I think they feel left behind. And if you're feeling that way, if you feel your country and your society has left you behind, that somehow politically correct language is a put-down of you, is a kind of condescending lesson that the dominant culture is trying to force down your throat, then you're going to be fearful. You're going to be fearful that you're losing the country that you love, which is why the Make America Great Again was such an effective slogan. And so I think that people like us who did not vote for Donald Trump need to be a little bit humble here and to say, what do these people have to say to us that it's very clear they don't think we've listened to before? And what is the fear that is driving this turn of events? Mm-hmm. And what needs to happen to make them understand that they need not be fearful?
I think that's a great suggestion and observation. I just have to be honest with you. I see that as being a dangerous way to go forward, because I'm not at all sure, Gene, that he's not going to disappoint all the people that voted for him. And those who think they're now moving to the front of the line and they're going to have jobs plenty, and he's going to be really sympathetic with the little person in the nation. And right now, with the changes he's making, he doesn't show any signs of doing that.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the question that we're all asking is, how long will it take for the people who voted for him, how long will it take for them to realize they've been conned?
Right.
And I don't think it's going to be anytime soon, mm-hmm. because they have cut him so much slack. Mm-hmm. They have allowed him to say and do the most outrageous thing, and it just rolls off of him like Teflon.
Yeah.
And so I think one of the questions is going to be, how long will it take for them to understand? You know, for instance, you know what? The coal mining jobs are not coming back to West Virginia. Mm-hmm. That is just a fact. Mm-hmm. And how long will those coal miners that he told he would bring their jobs back, how long will they give him to meet that promise? And then the accompanying question is, what can we do for those coal miners? I would say that they chose the wrong solution to their problem, but they have a problem, mm-hmm. and we ignore it to our peril.
Right. Gene, I know you're a bridge builder, and you've always been someone who's committed to reaching out to other people, but I get the distinct sense since this election that many of the political right are actually sitting there with a kind of now what confusion, even as many of the left are feeling pretty helpless. So what can we say about that chasm and how we bridge that chasm?
I think that is the conundrum of this time. I mean, there's several things working here. One is that we are actually sorting ourselves out into neighborhoods and locations and even states where we live, so as to only come into contact with people who think like us.
Mm-hmm.
That right out of the get-go is a dangerous and discouraging thing. Second of all, I think I would go a step further than saying we only watch the news that is gives us the kind of news we want to hear. Although that's really true, I think the most frightening thing that has come out of this turn of events is that there seems to be a large part of the population who does not care what the facts are.
Absolutely.
And if we're not going to deal in the truth, then, I mean, I can't even think about that for very long, or else I just start feeling hopeless, right?
Sure.
I mean, you might have a chance of building those bridges if you could at least agree about some basic truths, some basic accounts of what is happening, what is not happening. But if you're going to just defy the facts and believe that they're not true, mm-hmm. I'm not sure where the common ground is. And so I think we're left with finding ways to interact with and be in touch with people who are different from us.
Yeah.
I mean, so when we write an op-ed, instead of sending it to the New York Times Post, you know, we ought to be sending it to the paper in Wichita or San Antonio or Boise, Idaho, and seeing if they will print it, and try to get some sort of conversation going. But because I think if we continue not to have any kind of contact with those people, we will not undo this anytime soon.
Gene, the question that really just presses on my mind a lot, and I wish it didn't because I'm disturbed by the question itself, but is it time for people to come together, or are these things about this election things that are just too extreme for us to treat as normal politics?
Yeah, there's an awful lot about this that is so alarming at such a depth that you have to wonder about that. But here's the helpful thing, right? I think this ought to be a time for people of faith. I think, and I'm not talking about Christians. I'm talking about a multi-faith, diverse, intergenerational group of people who begin to claim a set of values in God's name. I think one of the most disturbing things about this election was, I think I got this right, I think it's 81% of people who identify as evangelicals
mm-hmm.
voted for Donald Trump,
right.
Which says to me that actually they don't have religious values, they just have political values.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been suffering under the illusion that it was their religion that was driving them, and I think that just turns out not to be true. And so in light of that, it seems like a great opportunity for people of faith, Jews and Christians and Muslims and Sikhs and Hindus and people of no faith but people of goodwill to begin to organize and to raise these issues and conversations about values and what we stand for. I think that phrase about making America great again, I mean, it just exposed what the meaning of great meant to those people, which was mostly white, mostly patriarchal, mostly Western men, right? Mm-hmm. And so where is the alternative? And who's making the case for a respect for all religions, a respect for all people, a respect for all genders and gender identities, LGBT people, poor people? The list goes on and on. But we are, I think we're too much in our own silos, and we have simply got to band together, or else this thing is going to kill us.
As I would expect, that's great admonition, and I think we ought to just leave it right there for now. But we've got a lot more talking to do in the days ahead. The Right Reverend Gene Robinson was the first openly gay man to be elevated to bishop in the Episcopal Church. He's the author of several invaluable books, including God Believes in Love, Straight Talk About Gay Marriage, and In the Eye of the Storm, Swept to the Center by God. Today, Gene serves as Senior Fellow at the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. He has always been very eager to join us on State of Belief Radio, for which we are grateful. And, Gene, it's just always great to have a conversation with you, and this one was no exception with you being on State of Belief Radio again.
Thank you so much, Welton, and I want to wish you and everyone listening a wonderful holiday season.
Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. If you've made a donation to State of Belief Radio this week, I want to say a sincere thank you. We rely on your support to be able to continue this important work. Now, if you've heard something that you found to be helpful on today's show, I urge you to share that with others who might also benefit from hearing it. It's really easy to do that on Facebook and Twitter. You can also direct them to stateofbelief.com, where they'll find full episodes and in-depth archive, extended interviews, transcripts, and links mentioned in the show. State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance. Become a member today at interfaithalliance.org. And be sure to join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. Until next week, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That's State of Belief.
The only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. See what he was.